Mr. Oram, if you're ready to proceed, please do so.
May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Oram. I represent Mr. Denvers. Mr. Denvers has some issues here that really sort of compounded themselves. And what I mean by that is the district court erred when it did not grant severance. But if the state was to argue that severance should not have been granted, then the district court erred by not letting us do a preemptive strike on Mr. Duarte Herrera, showing that he was a Home Depot bomber, which he's being convicted of a few months ago, that he was a self-admitted bomber, that he had bombed indiscriminately out in the desert. If the court finds that that should not have been introduced, the biggest problem comes as follows. The court had then protected Duarte Herrera to the point where we were not allowed to attack him at all. I was not allowed to say what my client had told the police. What my client told the police is, yes, I have motive for this in terms of this lady had a child with me. I wanted to see my child. I was followed. But in an act of misguided loyalty, Duarte Herrera must have placed this bomb in a coffee cup unbeknownst to me. And when the police ask him about it, he says, you know, he did this Home Depot bombing. He's done these other bombings. So if all of that is kept out, and that's exactly what happened here, what I don't see how anybody can argue is the following. That after all of that happens and Duarte Herrera is protected to that extent, then Duarte Herrera starts, through his counsel, telling the jury, Mr. Duarte Herrera does not know how to make a bomb. In fact, it's Mr. Oram's client who is the bomber. By the way, we're going to call a witness, and they did. They called a witness without telling the court that came up and said that my client knew how to repair vacuum cleaners. Once that happened, then it became obvious that what Duarte Herrera had done is said that my client was the bomber. And that's exactly what he said. Now, the district court, prior to trial, asked me, are you going to attack Duarte Herrera? Are you going to introduce these matters? I said, yes, that's my plan of attack. My plan of attack is to do exactly what Mr. Denvers told the police that had happened. In an act of misguided loyalty, the co-defendant placed a bomb, which he has done in the past indiscriminately. And I find it offensive that the co-defendant did not stand up and tell the court his intent was exactly the same. So the district court protected him from us attacking him with all of his bad acts, and then the district court permits him to attack us. That is improper. It should result in a new trial. When we look at opening the door, I do not see how there can be any argument that Duarte Herrera had not opened the door. And what I mean by that is, essentially, as I argue before this court, my pick is not with the state of Nevada. It most certainly is not with Mr. Stanton, because I'm going to quote Mr. Stanton prior to trial. Prior to trial, Mr. Stanton attempted to introduce and join the Home Depot bombing into the instant case. The co-defendant filed a motion for severance from the Home Depot bombing. It was granted. Then counsel for the state says to the court, this is prior to trial, I think it's precariously puts Mr. Duarte Herrera's counsel on notice that the ruling or the door can be opened very easily by them and whatever they perceive to do as the defense in this case. And I've heard some comments, not only in their pleadings, but also this morning, that gives me grave concern that they are not going to walk in, that they are not going to walk in or open the door to that, then becoming extremely relevant. The prosecutor further stated later, but I think there is going to be a compelling need for defense counsel to argue certain things to this jury, and as soon as they do, I think the door to the desert bombing is going to be open. Those are the words of Mr. Stanton. He perceived that there was no way Mr. Duarte Herrera could defend himself in this case without opening the door. That's exactly what happened. And so it is difficult for me to understand how the district court could make the rulings it did, because it was threefold. Again, why wasn't severance granted? If the court wants to say severance should not have been granted, there should have been a joint trial. Why were we not allowed to put forth our theory of defense? And our theory of defense was quite simple, and that is that the co-defendant did all these bombings, and he does it indiscriminately, and without apparent motive. Nothing about Mr. Denver's defense makes any sense unless you let him defend the way he told the police. And that is that, yes, I had the motive, but I'm not guilty. And the analogy I give, there's really two that I think are important here. And one is that if you have a friend who is a pyromaniac, who likes to set fires indiscriminately without apparent motive, sometimes pyromaniacs like to do that, and your friend finds out that you're having a problem with person X, ex-girlfriend, ex-friend, former employer, and so the pyromaniac decides to burn down that person's house. Now you're left with motive. But you're trying to explain, listen, I know he's a pyromaniac. I know he does these things.
So that kind of begs the question, why couldn't a jury find, you've been driving around with a pyromaniac going past your girlfriend's house. Doesn't it cut equally harsh the other direction?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Justice Perry-Gary. He didn't drive by her house, but he did
drive by her home. I was addressing your hypothetical.
Yes. He went to her work, and I think that is an interesting statement. However, the difficulty becomes that you can't even defend that way and let the jury make that decision. What your point is, hey, if he's a pyromaniac, why'd you do that and then let the jury decide? The difference is we were never able to say he was a pyromaniac, and that was the problem. You see, so what essentially happened is we were never able to tell that jury, this man is a bomber. And in fact, what happens is they actually put the bombing on us.
Doesn't that leave the impression, in this case, you're driving around with a known bomber and you're driving past this person who you're having issues with, drive past a place where you know their car is parked, and all of a sudden it blows up?
Yes, that was the state's theory. But in return, if we never got to say the portion of your analogy, and that is that it's a known bomber. And so the known bomber, we were never able to say. So what the analogy...
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Doesn't that leave a greater bad impression?
No. Okay. No, not at all. I would think that's the only defense you have, because look at without that part of the analogy what it is. Mm-hmm. You have motive, you're driving around, and our client's the bomber. And that's what the end result was. So we couldn't defend. Do you see? So in other words, you're driving around...
And the defense is, well, I didn't know he put a bomb on me.
Oh. Right, but
right.
But how
you know he's a bomber.
But then we were perceived to be the bomber. Do you see? Mm-hmm. Well, you're giving the analogy that you're driving around with a known bomber, and the fact of the matter is nobody knew that. They assumed that Mr. Denvers was the bomber. And that's the ultimate difficulty with the case, is that the district court did not let us defend the way that the defendant had told the police what had occurred. And it was quite clear that Pilo, or Mr. Duarte Herrera, was the bombman. And so I don't understand how we're not even permitted to defend making the argument, because maybe the jury does believe that the man's a pyromaniac who actually set a bomb or actually set a fire for no apparent reason. And I'll tell you, look, in the Home Depot bombing, they kicked in the door of the poor employee of the Home Depot. Here was an employee who'd done nothing wrong. And the ATF went and raided his house. He took a lie detector test. He failed it. He was going through so many bad things. Now, I don't want to exaggerate, but I remember that there was testimony of how badly he was affected. So in that, you see, that situation, everybody thought he was the bomber. And he wasn't the bomber. He was completely innocent. So the analogy you're giving me, Justice Perry-Gary, could definitely be applied to him too. Like, well, you have, if you're just perfectly innocent, how could this be? Well, that's because what you have is you got a serial bomber running around. And if he's willing to do that to some poor innocent man at the Home Depot bombing, why wouldn't he do it in an act of misguided loyalty for Mr. Denvers? And that is the difficulty. Furthermore, I think it begs the question, and that is the following. How does that man, Duarte Herrera, get to attack Mr. Denvers as being the bomber? And how does Mr. Duarte Herrera get to put on a witness that says that Mr. Denvers is the bomber? They don't say that, but they say that he knows he has the skill to make a vacuum or repair vacuums. And then the district court not say, okay, now you've opened the door. You've opened the door. If you guys want to fight like that, I've protected you, but if you're going to say that, then Mr. Denvers should be allowed to say, hey, wait a second. I may know how to repair a vacuum, but you are a self-admitted bomber. You've committed the Home Depot bombing. You've bombed indiscriminately out in the desert. And given that, I don't understand how reversal is not mandated. With that, I ask the rest to be reserved for rebuttal.
Good morning, David Stanton on behalf of the state in this matter. Let me begin by putting somewhat in context the facts that were elicited at trial regarding the bomb maker, because I think in some part the core of what Mr. Orem is going to argue now and in his rebuttal is that he was handcuffed in being able to present evidence regarding the serial bomb making of Mr. Herrera. This jury heard testimony that Mr. Herrera told in his interview to the homicide detectives that he made the bomb. The confession, as I'm sure was not lost on this court, was in great detail about him making the bomb, how he made it, and in fact, justices, he drew them a detailed schematic, literally a schematic diagram with electronic connections that precisely matched the forensic reconstruction of this device, not only as to the components of the bomb, to the point that the wiring that they found in the post-blast reconstruction was of Christmas lights. Those same items and the end caps found in the search of Mr. Herrera's home. That's the context of what this jury knew about who created this bomb. From that, counsel argued at trial and before you now that the door is flung wide open when they call a witness to say that he, Mr. Denvers, worked with electronic vacuums at his place of employment. There was one additional thing, a piece of evidence not mentioned at all orally or in his brief, that they argued that he did not make the bomb. They called an expert by the name of Michael Hansen, a bomb expert. And he testified that he reviewed the diagram that I just mentioned, and that diagram as drawn would not work. The only reason it wouldn't work, as he conceded under oath, was that the wires shown were injected into the foam. If you could imagine a pipe bomb placed in a cup in order to secure it so it wouldn't flop around, he sprayed foam in it. And the diagram showed that the wires went into the foam, and this bomb expert says, as he drew it, bomb wouldn't have detonated. It was just an error in the drawing, but that was the evidence that they turned around to argue that he was not the bomb maker. The overwhelming evidence clearly indicated the proper roles of both in this case. The trial court properly ruled that their door was not opened by the introduction of that evidence. Two, what in fact, what Mr. Orem wants to do is what the laws of evidence prohibit under 48045 subsection 1 is propensity evidence, which is not admissible as a matter of Nevada law. And as his analogy directly highlights, that is of a pyromaniac, just because you set fires doesn't mean you did it in this particular case. And let me just highlight what they want to admit to show this pyromania. And I think that's critical. The only thing that they can argue legitimately to some extent, is the Home Depot. He says this serial motiveless bombing, both in his brief and in his reply, it's replete with references that it's motiveless, random, like this pyromania bombing. Number one, there was no statement ever given about bombings learned in Nicaragua. That was gleaned from the investigation of other family members. That was absolutely inadmissible, and there was nothing to actually confirm that that ever existed or occurred. He did, in his interview, admit that he had detonated previously bombs in the desert. But that's akin to people going out to the desert to shoot guns. Just because you do that doesn't mean you're akin to a pyromaniac or a serial sniper. The other thing is the Black Pearl. The Black Pearl occurred the same night of the Home Depot. It was pure coincidental. It was related to probably an investigation and problems dealing with a motorcycle gang, but on videotape, as I indicated in the record when we argued this, the person who said it was a very muscular, almost a bodybuilder type person, and it involved gasoline. There was absolutely no relevance or connection between that event and any of the parties in this particular case. So at the end of the day, the only act that they could reasonably assert is the Home Depot. And as the trial court ruled, it was completely different from the bombing at the Luxor. Wasn't the same device, wasn't triggered the same device. This Luxor bomb was triggered by the victim. It was designed by that. It had a pressure switch on the bottom of it, and this cup was placed in the rain gutter of the vehicle right at eye level above the driver's door. Wouldn't have gone off unless someone picked it up, and that's what it did. Blew off his hand and sent a piece of the end cap into the victim's skull. This device was not victim-initiated, the Home Depot device. It was placed in the wheel well of a truck. It was 5 months before the Luxor. It wasn't made of the same components other than a pipe bomb, and it was initiated by the defendant with a Sunbeam timer, and he had left the scene. Whereas in the Luxor, both defendants, after setting the bomb in the coffee cup, went across and waited for the explosion and emergency personnel to arrive. So what they couldn't get through was propensity evidence. They're arguing potentially now is under 48045 subsection 2. But for what purpose? Do they have any motive, identity, any of the recognized exceptions to say that because he set off a bomb at Home Depot, he then would have done it here? And as the court pointed out, where's the analogy that he did it out of misguided loyalty? Now, their argument would make sense, but for one critical piece of evidence that absolutely didn't exist in this case. His client, Mr. Denver's, was there when the bomb was placed. It was shown on videotape, and that videotape was admitted at trial. Now, if he was sitting at home, as he sets forth in Mr. Orman is hypothetical, and unbeknownst to him, his misguided loyalty friend goes and plants the bomb to gain some favor, presumably, then he would have a potentially a more powerful argument. Not only was he there when the bomb was placed, but the videotape showed that an hour earlier they had driven by with his client, Mr. Denver's, driving to do what? To pick out the victim's car. And it was shown on the videotape as he drove up and down each aisle on the roof of the Luxor parking garage looking for the victim's car. Brake lights turns on right behind the car. Testimony is they drive home, pick up the bomb, drive back, and then in the videotape, no searching up and down the aisles, drives directly to the victim's car, park brakes next to it, and then you see one person get out of the car and plant the device from the passenger side on the roof of the car. And his statement, that is the defendant's, was admitted at trial that confirms he was there, but it said that he had no idea and no knowledge what his co-defendant was doing when he got out of the car.
So on that point, Mr. Stanton, I wonder if you could address the Bruton claim. There was an interaction between the state and the detective at 1940 of the appendix, where the state asks Herrera if they had gone. Did you ask Herrera if they had gone to look for the car before going back to his house to get the bomb? The detective, yes, I did. And did he say they had? Detective, yes. And did he say that the reason they went back to the house was to get the bomb? Detective, yes.
Yes. Judge, and I think that absolutely comports with Bruton. They were, that the testimony as the jury heard it was through those neutral pronouns, and that it does not facially incriminate the defendant. And then more in particular, what the courts have routinely stated is, if you admit that statement that is neutral in its presentation, but other evidence in the trial fills in those gaps of the neutrality of that statement, that's not a violation of Bruton. And indeed, that's exactly what happened, because that videotape then it paints the picture of who they is. And it's not confusing because, once again, Judge, both of their statements put them in that car. One says, I don't know what's going on, and Mr. The bomb maker, Pilo, admits that he did place the bomb on the roof of the car. So not only is it neutral and not incriminatory on its face, which was what Bruton prohibits, but the fact that you can use other evidence that shows who those people are is entirely proper and doesn't violate Bruton. I think that's what occurred in this case. In addition, there is one comment I'd like to make that's raised in the briefing about under 47.120, the entirety of the statement being admissible. Clearly, that statutory exception did not apply in this case because there was nothing inconsistent that was elicited by the state's rendition of this the particular defendant's story. To then claim, okay, I want to get in other aspects of the statement does not fit under that particular rule, and that it was clear from the court's ruling that they found that the state's presentation of the evidence did not bring or highlight any inconsistencies. Finally, the arguments, briefly, the consular relations have been fully addressed, and the fabric of that issue has been, I think, well settled, both Garcia in the state perspective and by Medellin, by the United States Supreme Court, from a federal perspective. The jury instructions are well settled areas of law, and the court properly ruled on the admission of this particular defendant's statements. I only highlight those issues because it is argued at the end and by reference to the Chartier case about cumulative error, that indeed there is no cumulative error in this case on any of the other ancillary issues as well. And unless there's additional questions by the court, that would be my presentation to you this morning.
Anything additional?
Thank you.
Your Honor, with regard to the Bruton issue, with they, what I raise is under Duxworth, when I hear the state arguing that they, it does not matter. In Duxworth and Martin, what happened is Mr. Duxworth's girlfriend got on the witness stand and said that Mr. Duxworth had confessed to murdering this couple and raping the female. And what had happened is the district court judge had sanitized the statement so that it did not mention Mr. Martin. It just said things, and I can't swear to the fact that it said they, but it sanitized it to say that it was Duxworth and someone else. Well, Martin was the only person sitting there, so this court found that was error, because the only logical conclusion would be that Mr. Duxworth was saying that I committed murder, and I committed it with the person sitting right to my right. Here it's the exact same thing. When they say they, who would the jury reasonably believe he was talking about?
Well, on that score, Mr. Oram, if the panel disagreed with Mr. Stanton's characterization of the word they as neutral, isn't the admission of this testimony harmless?
No, I don't think it's harmless. I don't think it's harmless because I think that there were just so many errors compounded in this case, as I went over when I was first talking.
Well, rather than focusing on cumulative error, was the admissibility of this testimony nevertheless harmless?
No, it was not harmless, because it was, again, directly implicating my client's intent to be involved in the bombing itself. Our argument was that he had misguided loyalty, and I've gone over that. And so when Mr. Duarte Herrera, through the police, is able to say, we went back, and one other thing that was mentioned, I don't think that you had mentioned that, and that was the other person would not know how to function the device, and that's why they went back. That came out through the detective, that they went back because the other person did not know how to function the device. That
and the videotape didn't show the two of them together going back to the car. Is that what you're saying?
Justice Perry-Gary, it showed both of them out there.
Yeah.
Is that mm-hmm. My client was definitely there, if that's what you're asking.
So but it showed them.
It did show them. It showed them out near the car. It does not show my client placing a bomb.
No, and that's not what the statement indicates either. But going back to Justice Hardesty's question, why isn't this harmless error? There's other evidence that essentially presents the same thing.
It doesn't present the intent, of the parties. If what's happening here is Pilo is essentially saying that the other person, and the other person would not know how to function the device, that goes to the mens rea itself, and that is that he has the evil mind as well, and the video would never show that. And And then going back, so I think it is, I don't see how it could be harmless. It's no more harmless than in Carl Martin, where I believe in Martin there was actual DNA linking Martin to that particular case on the form of a cigarette butt. But I also want to mention that when I hear the Home Depot bombing and I hear the state arguing there's so many differences, I really would argue it's disingenuous for the state to stand down in district court and say, this should be joined. We've joined it. And look at the similarities. When they lose that, and now I'm making the same argument that they made in district court, to come to this court and say, it's so different. It's just so different. And that causes me some concern how they can say that just downstairs and come up here and say something very, very different. And that does cause me some concern. The Pearl tattoo parlor bombing, I conceded that. So I don't think there was an argument, and I did in my brief. I told the district court, I think I'd be hard-pressed to get that into evidence. But what I don't understand, and I'll leave it with this, is that with all of these things, with the analogy you've given me, Justice Perry-Curry, one thing I just don't understand, and I don't understand from trying the case, is that if you keep all of this out, and it's hockey players, one wants to fight the other, and you're like, no, you can't do that. We're not going to permit it. And then finally, after doing that, you let the one guy, you let Duarte Herrera pull off his gloves and start punching Denver's, saying, oh, you knew how to make a vacuum cleaner. We don't even know how to make a bomb. I don't understand how we can't then strike back. That's what I will never understand about this case.
Well, and Mr. Oram, this isn't a hockey contest, but I appreciate the analogy. The concern or the problem, though, is as the state points out, that prior bad act evidence has to be admissible under 48045.
Well, doesn't the vacuum have to be admissible?
Well, I don't know. That issue wasn't addressed here. We're focusing on the admissibility of the prior propensity.
May I finish my response?
Well, of course, ahead, sure.
Yes. Well, I don't understand. I did address that quite completely, saying that they opened the door, and that's why I quoted the Ninth Circuit, that once they did the vacuum, then no matter how ludicrous that may sound, I thought it sounded ludicrous. Mm-hmm. I don't understand then how we're not, if they've opened the door, how can we not explain back to the jury, hey, wait a second, this is the Home Depot bomber. And that's how I...
Well, maybe I'm not adequately communicating my question. I'll try again. Even under the circumstance, just because a door's been opened with respect to the vacuum cleaner evidence, it is still necessary to make a connection as to why that prior bad act evidence, the prior bombing involvement, is admissible under 48045. And the purpose for asking the question was to ask you to connect that to say why it is admissible under 48045.
Your Honor, it would be for the following reason. The state even said that they called an expert to say this guy, he didn't, what his drawing was, it's not a bombing. He couldn't make a bombing. And he's saying that Mr. Denvers is the bomber. Therefore, it becomes admissible to show that, in fact, he is the bomber and that it was not Mr. Denvers. That's why I saw it directly analogous to the hockey fight, because what's happening is he's fighting with us. He's saying it's Orem's client, it's Orem's client, it's Orem's client. Look, he knows how to repair a vacuum. Then the response is, no, he's an admitted bomber. It's him. He's the bomber. And that's what I don't understand. How can the vacuum, how can all of this be admissible? And then the court is saying, how would the Home Depot bombing be relevant? Well, it becomes relevant at the point when Pilo is saying, I'm not the bomber. I don't know how to do this. Then it becomes relevant to attack back and to show them that he is the bomber, not Mr. Denvers, and that it was misguided loyalty. No matter how weak you may think that may be, it was his defense. And what was happening was the one side was able to attack us, and we were not able to attack back. Mm. I don't understand that. So with that, I submit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Orr, Mr. Stanton, thank you for the arguments this morning. This matter stands submitted.